Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Leave No Capstone Unturned. Today, due to overwhelming listener demand, we'll be talking about a few of my personal insights into education. As you longtime listeners know, I've spent a lot of time this year working as an assistant teacher in Randy Beckman's first grade class at Bell Sherman Elementary. So all my insights will relate back in one way or another to the Sunflower Room and the science lessons that I taught there. Let's get the ball rolling with the first insight. Planning ahead lets you deviate from the plan. Now, what this means is that when you are more prepared to teach a lesson, say you have a lesson plan written out or you have more information ready than you'll actually need, it allows you to be flexible in how you teach and what you teach. Being prepared to answer any questions that come up, being prepared to pose challenges to fast-moving students, coming over prepared allows you to adapt and change to whatever the classroom needs of you. Furthermore, knowing the materials and the procedure well allows you to more efficiently and more effectively spend time teaching and have the students spend time learning rather than figuring out logistical or technical details. On top of that, it just makes you a more confident teacher. And students will always tend to listen to somebody who seems more sure of themselves and more sure of the material. Now, I think the most important way that you can apply this in a regular classroom setting is to practice your lesson ahead of time. In terms of science lessons, get used to working with the materials and be familiar with the procedure and practice your delivery. Doing these things will let you avoid panicking when things go off course because you've already planned ahead for it. Additionally, having a clear goal in mind and having many ways to reach that goal is incredibly valuable. For instance, in our science lessons at Bell Sherman, we had focus questions that I would write on the board at the beginning of each day, even before we started teaching science. During the lesson, I would not only remind students of that focus question, but I'd try to apply it in, some ways to what I was teaching. So for instance, while they were exploring shadows using flashlights, I reminded them repeatedly how light beams can make shadows, which was the focus question for that day. I think this helped the students not only stay on topic, but also it reinforced certain terms and concepts that were very important for that unit. This all ties back to proactive classroom management, a topic that I've talked about in multiple education classes here at Cornell. Having routines and procedures set up in a way that it's conducive for learning is so powerful in a classroom setting. So this can be anything from passing out materials and setting up equipment to your procedure for cleaning up afterwards. And I like to get students used to a protocol for certain things. In my science lessons, this was really useful because I taught them about the scientific method and about how to explore a topic and then record results and observations later on. And then, for every future science lesson, they were familiar with this routine because I kept reinforcing it and I stuck with it. So being prepared in your teaching style can make everything run more smoothly. Students are more likely to abide by rules and norms and strategies if you establish them early on and stick with them throughout the year. And again, this can be anything from how you call on students, and a couple of my favorite strategies for that Randy used were her name cards or a kind of pseudo-random system where she picked on students who looked like they might know the answer but weren't raising their hand to volunteer, to how you keep control of the room from talkative or disruptive students. So a couple strategies that I employed at Bell Sherman were counting down from five, doing a waterfall, which is essentially going waterfall, shh, surprisingly effective, and of course, freeze please, which worked almost every time. Lastly, your pace and tone of talking are surprisingly important in your consistency as a teacher. Making sure that you speak and teach at a calm pace in a pleasant tone can make a huge amount of difference into how much your students listen to you and how much they actually learn from your lessons. So as we look ahead, just remember to come up with strategies early on and stick with them. For me, I think that'll mean consistency. There's nothing more frustrating than a leader or a teacher who's inconsistent in how they lead or teach. So I'll make it a priority to establish routines and norms and stand by them for the entirety of a class. Next up is stronger relationships lead to stronger learning. What this means is that essentially the more students like you, the more they'll listen to you and want to learn from you. This ties into intrinsic motivation, another topic that's popular in my education classes. Students feel motivated to try hard in the classroom if they have positive feelings about the teacher. And this is a lot better than sources of extrinsic motivation, like assessments or grades. A teacher that helps students feel like they belong will help students learn. This is a really important principle of motivation that teachers play a huge part in. From my personal experience, the teachers that were the most memorable were the ones that I liked. Thinking back to the classes that I felt like I got the most out of, I always liked the teachers and wanted to do well in their classes. At Bell Sherman, for me, this meant spending time with the kids. You know, at lunch, recess, choice time, building relationships and getting to know them outside of their classwork. I tried to talk to different students every day, tried not to play favorites, of course, because I wanted to build up and maintain a relationship with as many students as I possibly could. Some students are naturally more talkative, and I found it a little bit challenging to reach out and engage with the ones that didn't actively seek out my presence. But I saw incredible results when I did make that effort to go and connect with those shyer students. I found that at the beginning of the day, students were not only more excited to see me, they were more excited to learn from me when it came around to science time. There's so much value in having students feel comfortable talking to you and sharing answers with you, and it can make the classroom experience easier and more powerful. At DeWitt Middle School, where I helped lead a film club after school, walking students up to the buses after film club ended was a small action that had a surprisingly large effect on how I interacted with my students. We didn't really get enough time during film club to talk about anything besides film club. We had a tight schedule and a lot of stuff to get done. So talking about things besides school on our way up to the buses was a great way to connect with my students, even though I only saw them once a week. But even in this short amount of time, getting to the point where I can talk casually with my students before we start filming for the day or after we end puts them at ease, and it makes them happier, and it makes me happier, and I think it makes everyone more willing to work together on our film. So in the future, I think it's really important to remember to reach out to every student. I know I will definitely try to have a meaningful conversation with every single one of my students at least once a week. And beyond that, I want to talk to my students about more than just school. I want to get to know them on a more personal level. Lastly, I'm going to talk about the value of science education for English learners. And there are three main points that I really, really thought stood out during my time at Bell Sherman. These were the value of hands-on visual teaching and classwork, the real-life application and use of background knowledge, and the different modes of assessment. The scientific method and strategies for inquiry-based learning that are often applied in science teaching are almost a different language that students need to learn. In this way, it can almost be an even playing field between English as a new language students and students who have English as a native language, if the teacher teaches it as such. Explorations offer a more hands-on and inquiry-based approach that doesn't require as much vocabulary, reading, or listening comprehension. And the visual nature of demonstrations, or being able to actually see what is happening instead of only having it explained, is really valuable for these students. I like to think of it as teaching by showing or by example, rather than teaching by talking. In the Sunflower Room, I had two students who I wouldn't say were shy, but definitely didn't volunteer to talk very often, and they were both English language learners. Even though they didn't verbally show their knowledge too often, they demonstrated an incredible understanding of our science lessons through their science writing and experimentation in general. Every day that I taught science, they were clearly so excited about what we were learning. And I think this really paid off because I do think that they gained a lot from these lessons. Now, one of the most important ways for a teacher to help their English language learner students in a science setting is by providing scaffolding. This is a term I learned in one of my education classes, and what this means is that you have to provide the structure and the support to make learning easy for your students. One way in which I observed this at Bell Sherman was when our English as a New Language teacher took aside some students before science lessons and pre-taught them. In other words, she introduced concepts to them in a visual and verbal manner before the actual lesson, so that these students were able to comprehend better when it actually came to the real lesson. The use of background knowledge is inherent to science education itself. Scientific concepts build upon each other. That's just what they do. While this could be said for any number of different topics, I think it definitely lends itself to science in particular. The nature of science education is also incredibly valuable in building communication and collaboration skills. Students have to interact with other students to come to conclusions, and the science experiments at Bell Sherman involve tons of talking to peers, showing off what they discovered, and just talking to each other about what they're seeing. One last boon of science education is that science allows students to show what they've learned in multiple different ways, something that is incredibly important for English language learner students. Science doesn't necessarily have any one right answer. To be right is to discover things about a topic. I would relate this to problem-based learning, because students are given a subject, and they're given a challenge, and they have to work together to solve that problem by unpacking it a little bit at a time. Other modes of assessment include science writing, demonstration, verbal explanation, and I think all three of those have been really important in how I teach my science lessons in the Sunflower Room. We have science writing every afternoon, and I've seen students improve so much in their writing skills and in their ability to explain scientific concepts because of this. Students who wrote maybe a half page, only a couple sentences at the beginning of the semester, are now writing pages and pages and even having to move on to brand new science notebooks because they filled up their previous ones. On top of this, demonstration is a huge part of these experiments. Students enjoy showing off what they've discovered. So in the future, I will continue to encourage hands-on and visual science education in all classrooms. I'm going to try to apply the strategies that I use in my exploratory science learning at Bell Sherman to all the subjects that I teach, because I really think the ideas of visual hands-on learning, real-life application and the use of background knowledge, and these differential modes of assessment are so, so valuable, especially when it comes to students who don't have English as their native language and for whom conventional teaching might not be as effective. For all of you out there, I hope my insights helped you uncover something about your own teaching and will give you something to think about as you move ahead in your journey as a teacher and a learner. Thank you for tuning in to Leave No Capstone Unturned. I'll see you next time.